Okay, I was going to talk about this, Deformations of ADS4 Solutions, which is work that I did with Sangmin Lee, Tony Mateos, and Dan Waldrum, and appeared here. And I was going to tell you about starting with a solution of D equals 11 supergravity of this form, where G4 is just a 4, G4 is the volume form on ADS4. And then a procedure, which was discussed by Lunan and Meldacena, of producing beta deformations of these solutions. So you take particular classes of solutions, and then there's a well-defined generating procedure to get ADS4 warped compactification X7, and then G4 is this volume form plus a 4 form on X7. But I decided not to. So, so what I want to talk about is classifying SUSY ADS5 solutions of 2B supergravity. And this is work that I'm doing with Dario Martelli at CERN and James Sparks at Harvard and Dan Waldrum at Imperial. And the reason I was going to talk about this and not this is that this is work in progress. And it's a bit technical. That's two reasons not to do this. But then I thought it's two reasons to do it. So let me give you a flavor of what we're up to. It's, as you see, the final results do get a bit technical, but nevertheless. Okay, so in 2B, there's been a lot of discussion, at least in some of the parallel sessions, about ADS5 cos X5, the Psaki-Einstein solutions, where the only fluxes is the self-dual 5 form. And we have a direct product of ADS5 with a Sasaki-Einstein space. And Sasaki-Einstein space, I think everyone knows by now, but in case people don't, the exact definition of Sasaki-Einstein can be given as the cone over the Sasaki-Einstein space is a Calabi-Yau threefold. There's nothing more or less to the definition of Sasaki-Einstein than that. So these geometries, of course, arise by taking some D3 brains. So the other point about this, of course, is this is a cone. So there's a singularity. Well, there's a cone like this. The base of the cone is the Sasaki-Einstein space. And at the apex of the cone, unless the Sasaki-Einstein space is around the phi sphere, we have a singularity. You put D3 brains at the apex of that singularity, look for the near horizon geometry, and you get this. So these are dual to the conformal field theories sitting on these D3 brains. Well, the question we want to look at is, so this is a class of 2B solutions, but we want to analyze the most general. So we want to look at the most general these solutions with an ADS5 factor and all the fluxes are non-zero. So in this case, only the 5 forms are non-zero, but we want to switch on the 3 forms and the axion and dilaton. Okay, before I tell you about the results, let me tell you, just remind you what we did in what results we got for a similar problem. So for D equals 11 supergravity, we played this same game some time ago, and we asked what the most general geometry of the form the metric of the form that, so it's the most general warped product of ADS5 with a 6-manifold. The lambda is just a scalar function on M6, and the 4 form is a non-zero 4 form on M6, and it can be, to begin with, completely general. So the techniques which I'll just describe a little bit later, or just sketch a little bit later, we applied to this case, and we did this classification. And what do we get? Well, I'm not going to give you the precise statement here, but we've got some general conditions on geometries. So the point is that I asked for those types of geometries that are supersymmetric. So we get some general conditions on the geometry. On the metric, the scalar function, and the 4 form on the 6 manifold. And just to give you a flavor of what those are, or were, you get a 1 parameter family of Kähler metrics on M6. You get a Killing vector and a 1 parameter family of Kähler metrics on M6, but they satisfy some more conditions, which I don't want to tell you in detail. But that was the first step. And the second step in this particular case is that we made an additional assumption on the geometry, which is very natural, and we assume that the 6-manifold is actually complex. So in general, supersymmetry doesn't imply that it's a complex manifold, but we assumed it's complex, and we also assumed it's compact, which for ADS CFT applications is good, because we want that to be compact, otherwise we'll get we won't get a good central charge. So this is n equals 1 and d equals 4.
You say the general supersymmetric solution is ADS5 plus something? What about ADS4 plus?
Sorry, this is the most general, the general geometry with an ADS5 flacker. So I just want to get the most general way you can get a conformal field theory, supersymmetric conformal field theory from 11 dimensions. I can just answer that in a moment. Okay, but this case, if we assume that M6 is complex, which is just an assumption completely independent of supersymmetry, and that it's compact, then what was fantastic is that you could work out the general, well, you could classify all the solutions. And the topology of all the solutions were all S2 bundles over a base manifold B, four-dimensional base manifold B. And this B could either be Kähler-Einstein with positive curvature. And in four dimensions, Kähler-Einstein with positive curvature, don't know exactly what that means, but it's exactly equivalent to this list. Product of two spheres, CP2 or Dolpetzos, which are CP2 blown up at K points with K between 3 and 8. So it could either be one of those, or it could be a product. And the product, you could take S2 cross T2, S2 cross S2, or S2 cross H2. This one is a more general one of this, because you can have the radii being different. H2 is the hyperbolic plane. It's not compact, but there's a solution, there's at least one solution in this class where the Killing spinners are independent of the coordinates of H2, and you can then take a discrete quotient of that, infinitely many in that case. But the general class, we don't know. It's one solution you can do that. The general solution in this class, I don't know if you can do that. But I put it in the list because at least there's some examples.
So then M6 is...
It's non-compact there, but if there's at least some examples of that form, then this is just some arbitrary Riemann surface. And then it's compact. Okay, so that's nice. And And the metric, so the topology is this, and the metric... Say that again, sorry? No. In the complex case, actually, yeah, I'm not sure. I think it's very unlikely that anything ever proves. There's one solution. In fact, there was only a couple of solutions known. So one was Meldacena and Nunez with n equals 1 supersymmetry, which in fact is this solution I just mentioned. And the other one is Meldacena and Nunez n equals 2 supersymmetry. And that's definitely not in the complex class. That's the reason why I think it's unlikely. Okay, so that's the topology. And the metric is completely explicit, provided that the metric on B is explicit. So obviously in this case, in this case, in this case, this case, in this case, it's all completely explicit. And in this case, it's explicit up to a metric on these spaces, which is not known. Okay, so that is a list of geometries, which it would be nice to say something about the field theory, whoever asked that question. And nothing's known about that, but I'm hopeful that some progress can be made on that. For example, one could work out central charges of these and so on. But let me just mention this one example of this list. That's this T2 factor. So if we dimensionally reduce on an S1, we get a 2A solution, and it turns out to be regular. And then if we T-dualize on the other S1, we get a 2B solution. And when the dust settles, you find that you have we recover, this is in fact how we discovered these YPQ Sasaki-Einstein metrics. So the Sasaki-Einstein metrics arise as a special case of this list of classified solutions of M theory that has the T2 factor. So
you get all the PQs?
You get all the PQs.
Freedom in the 11-dimensional solution that gives rise to
PQs. Yeah, so it's a good point. So the PQs...
P
and Q are arbitrary, some integers that if they're just some integers with P greater than Q and PQ being relatively prime. So these are the spaces that people have been discussing in the workshop in various contexts. But the discreteness here comes from making sure that the flux, the four-form flux, is globally well defined. So these solutions depend on a parameter, a constant parameter, but if you want to make sure that the four-form flux is globally defined, it will put a discrete condition on that, which exactly corresponds to this discrete condition here.
It becomes an H field when it becomes a beta, then it goes down to type 2A and then it becomes metric on T2A.
Yeah, you have a bunch of different fluxes in the 2A case. But there's one thing that's interesting here. This is meant to be motivation, but I just wanted to mention this one. I mean, just to tell people who don't know where these Sasaki-Einstein metrics came from, this is where they came from. And the second thing is that it seems interesting to me that this is, a lot's known about the field theory by taking this 2B picture, but the geometry is completely regular in 11 dimensions, which is a bit strange. I mean, there's an M-theory description of the same quantum field theory, which we know nothing about.
What's the topology of M6?
I guess it's S2 cross S2 cross T2. Because it's an S2 bundle over S2 cross T2, and the T2 doesn't have any... Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's S2 cross S2 cross T2. The trivial one, the S2 bundle. Okay, let me not... people can ask about this more, but the point was in this program is that there's a very general kind of machine to do this step, and that's what we can do in this 2B case, and I'll give you some flavor of this. And in this case, we made some very natural geometrical assumption on the geometry, and then we got this nice story. So that was the motivation. Since it works so nicely in 11 dimensions, could we repeat the story in 10 dimensions? So Clevenon stressor is non-compact in the radial direction. Yeah, I guess if you're out of the conformal case. No, wait a second. That's the radial direction which is growing. It's the analog of the radial direction. Oh, where it's constant. Okay, in that sense, it's growing. That the cross sections for fixed R are compact. That's enough.
Oh, I see. So, what happens in this case?
So everything in these geometries, everything's independent of the ADS5, because this.
What about this lambda?
The lambda is a function just of, it's a scalar function on M6.
Oh, I see.
And the reason is I want to preserve SF4T. Yeah, sorry about this. That's an important point. This is a function on here. So the whole problem boils down to a 6-manifold with a scalar and a 4-4.
Also, a question. I mean, don't you expect it to be some kind of reduction of the field theory to be a reduction of the 5-frame theory? Of the
in some sense,
theory,
yeah.
Reduced along that.
So all of these, I think, has something to do with the Zeroutou field theory, exactly. So only one case that I know where it corresponds to a fibrain wrapping a holomorphic cycle in a collabial threefold. That's the one case where that's explicit. But all these other cases, they should have such an interpretation that it's just unknown. Good. Okay. So, don't get your hopes up too high that we're going to be a successful, well, we aren't as successful as that in the 2B case, but nevertheless. So, switch to 2B. And we consider this ansatz. So, let me see the coordinates x here. This is this function just on that space, so we're going to maintain all the SO42 symmetries. The 5 form is just a constant, S is a constant, times 2 delta. And the three-form flux, complex three-form flux, we allow that to be non-zero, and the axion dilaton we also take as non-zero. And these are one forms and three forms just on the space X5. So the whole problem is completely thrown onto this five-dimensional space. Five-dimensional space with a scalar field, a complex three-form, and a complex one-form. Okay, so it's the most general way in which you could get ADS5 out of 2B.
So F is in the 5-form, X is a constant, or...?
F is a constant, little f.
And then you satisfy the chain, you have this chain term.
Yeah, that satisfies the. I mean, this has to be a 5. It's a 5 form on here plus a 5 form on here. So when you take the d of it, you've got no more.
But then that says something about V3.
I mean, this has.
Restricting then the deform to be such that it doesn't contribute to the.
Worry about the F wedge.
Right. So DF5 should be H3 wedge. So if that is zero, then you're saying.
No, but this is the most general way you can write down a 5 form, maintaining the SO42 symmetry.
So the function F might have a source.
Sources will show up in the detail.
So the equation which F satisfies is not Boxer F is equal to 0, it's just Boxer F equals to some stuff.
I mean, you're probably thinking about the case when this is Minkowski space, and then things could be a function of R.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Right, but we. But I'm just thinking the most general answer.
Can't agree with your G. Can't agree with H3 being non-zero.
Yeah, so then it's an equation for F. That is also a fine equation.
Yeah, probably on.
Depending on.
Okay, so the logic is this is the most general answer that's consistent with SO42 symmetry, and then we just put it into the Bianchi identities of the equations of motion and see what we get. And demanding that this is closed gives F this constant. Hi, John.
How come one formula has an E to the I phi and the other formula has an E to the phi?
Why this and this?
Yeah.
Have I written that down incorrectly?
Well, what's tau? Tau has to be the phi.
Yeah, that's right. Tau is. Yeah, sorry, I didn't define tau. Tau is e to the minus phi. That's.
Maybe it's a different phi.
I'm not sure what the problem is. I mean, is there obviously a problem?
Is the phi in the formula for G the dilaton?
Yes. And this is the dilaton, this is the dilaton. And I believe it's from your paper.
Why is there an I in the exponent?
Sorry. Sorry, I misheard. I was taking it to be the factor of 2 that you were worried about. Ah, sorry. Quite right. Sorry. Okay, so I think we're set. No I. Okay, so the problem is we take this and we want this to have supersymmetry, so it's going to satisfy the generalized Killing-Spinner equations. And we also want it to solve all the Bianchi identities and all the equations of motion. So Einstein's equations and E star G equals dot dot dot, big mess. Okay. Well, the first step, or the next step in the program, so it's just the ansatz that's straightforward, is then look at the most general way in which supersymmetry could be realized. And in D equals 10, we have two Majorana-Weyl spinners, the spin 9-1. And just roughly speaking, there's a little bit more to it than this, but roughly speaking, the most general way you can write this is so psi is in 4-1. So the most general ansatz for a spin 9-1 spinner decomposed into spin 4-1 cross spin 5 is of this form, and we demand that the spin 4-1 spinner satisfies this Killing-Spinner equation here, which ensures that we have n equals 1 supersymmetry in the ADS-5 space. Okay, so the conditions then boil down to conditions on these spinners. And I'm just going to sketch out what one gets. Just to give you some flavor. one. So there's two differential conditions. So the killing spinners in 10 dimensions, once you take this most general ansatz, turn into some differential conditions on the two spinners psi 1 and psi 2. And then you get some algebraic conditions, which are things like and then finally, I won't write it down, but there's another kind of condition which looks like okay.
Sorry, what's M in the first formula? Second term of the first formula.
Yeah, I should have. I was hoping I've said M equals one. It was the radius of the ADS space, the inverse radius of the ADS space. Okay, so the point is, so this now is the problem, is to try and understand the most general geometry that emits spinners, two spinners, spin phi spinners, psi 1 and psi 2, satisfying these equations which I've just sketched out, and in addition still satisfy the equations of motion.
Yes, in the algebraic conditions, that derivative is just acting on delta.
It's just acting on delta, exactly. Because it's not a derivative acting on the spinner itself. Okay, so that's the problem. Well, if anyone's been following our papers over a couple of years, we've developed our old techniques really, but some techniques to analyze this problem. And let me make the comment. So comment, if psi 1 equals 0, in fact more generally, if psi 1 is linearly dependent on psi 2, you can show that one of them must be 0. If psi 1 equals 0, by analyzing these equations, you can show that you're led back to the Sasaki-Einstein case. And in fact, if psi 1 is linearly dependent on psi 2, you similarly get back to the Sasaki-Einstein case. So the more general case when you have these fluxes is all to do with having two spinners. And just to reiterate, the fact that we have two spinners is still consistent with having n equals 1 supersymmetry in 4 dimensions. Because the n equals 1 supersymmetry, in 4 dimensions. This is implying the n equals 1 supersymmetry. We have one ADS5 killing spinner, but the 10-dimensional spinners is built out of two spinners. So the Sasaki-Einstein case, you build it out of one. In the general case, you build it out of two, but still consistent with n equals one supersymmetry. Okay, so we analyze using D-structure techniques, and I'm not going to tell you about exactly what I mean by that, but in practice we just construct all the bilinears out of psi 1 and psi 2, and then just analyze their differential and algebraic conditions and the way they're related to all the fluxes by analyzing these equations. So it's a completely straightforward thing to do, but it's conceptually, but it's technically very involved. The novel thing about this case, and so actually G structures, if we know about them, are not particularly useful, is that psi 1 and psi 2 form a basis for spinners in spin 5. So they span the vector space that spin 5 spinners live in.
Wait a second. The representation is bigger than
that. Yeah, but there's also the conjugate spinners. These are complex. Psi 1, psi 2, psi 1, psi 2. Yeah. So what this means in terms of G structures is they give you an identity structure. And an identity structure is just a canonical frame, orthonormal frame. So the bilinears. There's more bilinears than this, but when the dust settles, these are the ones that one needs to focus on. And I won't give you the exact definition, but you get a real scalar, a complex scalar, two complex vectors, and a real vector. This is acting on a complex four-dimensional vector space. So if I give you four spinners, psi 1, psi 2, and their complex conjugates. Not sure what you mean. But all I'm doing is just concretely what I'm doing is just taking these spinners and constructing all these bilinears. And the fact that these form a basis for spin 5, the isotropy group, another way of saying it, the isotropy group of these two spinners is the identity. I give you two spinners and I say, which spin 5 transformations leave it invariant? The answer is the identity. And the manifestation of that identity is that I can build five vectors out of these spinners, which gives me a canonical orthonormal frame. If psi 2 is equal to 0, then you get SE2. So this identity structure, so you wouldn't get as many bilinears as this. And instead of all this data, SU2 in D equals 5, roughly speaking, would be a vector, which brings you from 5 dimensions to 4. And then in the 4 dimensional space, you get a 2 form. So you get 2 2 forms. For experts in this area, everything I'm talking about G structures, like here, it's a local statement. And an interesting question is, what is the global statement?
I think this could degenerate.
It could degenerate, exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, there's two games going on. One is, if you want to get exact solutions, do everything locally, try and solve the differential equations, and then that's great. Then look at the global properties then. Another one is, once you have the general conditions for what the supersymmetric geometries are, try and make that more precise so we can develop intuition for what that means in itself. And that would mean being more precise about these global issues.
I'm going to ask you a question. By bilinear, do you mean this?
Sorry.
Sandwich between two sides?
Yeah. Sorry, I should have mentioned that. So you take an arbitrary. So these are just gamma matrices with n-symmetric indices, and take the conjugate spinners, and you consider all the. There's a lot of them, but that's what you do.
So there should be 20 objects, right? 4 times 5 over 2.
That sounds right. Yeah.
But I only count 18.
Yeah. So two points. One is that there's two more scalars which we've set equal to 0. And there's some additional ones which can be constructed out of these ones. No, I guess I take that back. I guess it must be that the other ones are all the other ones are actually equal to 0. But this, yeah. It's not a good, I mean, there's a better answer to your question, but this is the complete set and the dot set.
What the composition is used over here? Vectors under what?
So this is it just in five dimensional, as a five dimensional manifold by vectors. So I just mean that there's a single gamma matrix. Okay, so when I said identity structure, concretely what I mean is you take these guys, and in fact the metric now can be written down as, and it's not particularly nice, but I'm going to write it down anyway. Because this is the answer, well, as we understand it. Hopefully we can get some more insight. Okay. Oh, and N. So out of these bilinears, we construct these scalars, these complex vectors, this real vector. The metric takes this canonical form. So you can always construct the most general five-dimensional metric out of bilinears of the general supersymmetric solution, and it takes that form. And if you work, well, the free-form flux can be written in terms of this data. In fact, it can be written in terms of, should be more precise. It can be written in terms of the bilinears, which I've just written the metric in terms of, plus it also depends on the axion dilaton and the warp factor. There's a condition on P, which I won't write down. And there's the constant F, which is related to the warp factor and one of the bilinears, like this. Okay. And then, so this is the answer I'm putting up here. The most general ADS-5 geometry, type 2B string theory, with all fluxes equal, non-equal, can always be expressed in this form, and there's the bilinears satisfy some differential conditions. So the D of the S, the scalar S, with this warp factor is related to the complex vector like this.
Sorry, what was
D1?
Sorry,
what was which one?
In the equation.
Oh, so it's... comma. It's just the axion dilaton. Obviously the details don't matter too much. Okay, we're almost there. Okay. Okay, so the general metric and flux can be written down that way. With the bilinears, SK, the bilinears I wrote down satisfy these differential constraints. So the derivative on the S is K. A derivative on this complex vector K3 will give a 2-form, which is related to the fluxes, the dual of the 3-form, and another 2-form constructed out of all the bilinears. And then the of this one is related to another 2-form. So why did I write this up? Well, it is the answer. This is the answer. So,
question, is it possible from this general answer to go back to the Sasagian case and show that these are...
If you think about what the statement, so this, if you start with this guy, that means that you, to recover the Sasaki-Einstein case, some of these bilinears are going to be zero. So it's going to be some degenerate limit. So you can recover it as some scaling limit. I'll come back to that point maybe Well, no, I won't. Yeah, that's the answer. So the reason for putting this up is, I guess one point is an advertisement that this has been done. But it's, I think this is, I'm sure it can be developed a little further, this is the most general way in which you can get a conformal field theory, supersymmetric conformal field theory out of 2B. Now, if we think that four-dimensional superconformal field theories are an interesting class of objects, which we do, then this is an interesting class of geometry. That's I think the main message of a main message of the talk.
I guess you have to get to the global properties to see if
it's exactly. So you could that would be one thing you could try and do. Try and linearize these equations and see what sort of modulus space it is. But making more precise the global properties is probably makes sense. I mean, what I think would be most nice is existence theorem. So just like Calabi-Yau, we don't construct explicit Calabi-Yau metrics, but if we know existence proofs given some topological data, then that would be nice. Well, we know there are special cases, but the general story we know nothing about. So this was, yeah. So that's the main thing. Where's the eraser? Okay.
So we have both one brain charge.
Yeah, so you could have 7 brain charge, NS5 brain charge, D5 brain charge.
Are there examples now that you're not inside the Einstein?
Yes, there are. Then I'll come back to that. A little bit. Right. Yeah, that's always possible. Okay, if you've probably forgotten, but at the beginning of the talk I gave you the model of the 11-dimensional story. And this was what I've just written down or sketched out for you is the bit I didn't write down. That was the general classification in 11 dimensions. Something analogous to this, much, much simpler. So that's an interesting question in itself. Why was that simpler? Was it just simpler because we're a bit more used to even-dimensional geometries? So that was a 6-dimensional geometry. Or is there something deeper about type 2B geometries of this form? I don't know. If you look at this hard enough, or some of it's easy, but one thing is this was just supersymmetry. So if you might think that you need to also solve the equations of motion. But by looking at the integrability of these equations, you find that supersymmetry actually implies the equations of motion. So that's nice because it's no worse than this. K5 is one form. If you take its dual, it's a killing vector. Again, it's not obvious to what I wrote down, but it's not too difficult to show. And we knew we had to have this because it's dual to the fact that any four-dimensional superconformal field theory has a U and R symmetry.
I thought figure of Farrell was stressless. That's always important. That's what time-dependent solutions.
Well, what we proved is that if you have supersymmetry, then let's see what this precise statement is. If you have supersymmetry and you impose the Bianchi identity and the equations of motion for the fluxes and one component, at most one component of the Einstein's equation. That's the theorem. But here it's much better because, in fact, Bianchi identity, everything, all of this data comes out.
This is true always.
If you, that's the most general statement about supersymmetry. Bianchi identity is equation of motion for the fluxes, and one, at most one component of the Einstein equation. But here we have a lot more supersymmetry and a lot more structure. That's why. That's.
Okay. And the Einstein equation is only necessary in the case where the killing vector function supersymmetry is null.
Exactly. Okay, so we have a killing vector. So where up here. Well, this K5 is appearing in a couple of places. So so one needs to analyze a little further. Because you have a killing vector, that basically means the five geometries locally at least can be split into a 1 plus 4 decomposition. So just like the Psaki-Einstein, where locally this turns into a Kähler-Einstein space, there should be some way of thinking about the four-dimensional space with some interesting geometry here. But I mean, you can do this formally, but it's just more of the stuff that I've just written up. So I don't know. At the moment, it's not illuminating to me at all.
Sorry, but in the Psaki-Einstein case, is the U1 direction part of the Einstein 4 space, or is it?
No. So,
so
you can always write the Psaki-Einstein locally as that, where d by d psi is the U1 coming up.
And that's the cone direction.
Sorry. The cone is dr, so this is ds squared the Psaki-Einstein. Five dimensions, and in the cone dimension.
Oh, this, sorry.
So there should be always a U1 symmetry, right? Because of the superposition.
Exactly. So that was guaranteed before.
Oh,
yeah, that was guaranteed beforehand. But it's if you're looking for it, it's pretty straightforward to find that one.
So what happens now if you take this and t-dualize back to type K?
If you t-dualize on this U1, then you'll break the symmetry. So that's not such a good thing to do. So you'd want to have, in the 1 plus 4 decomposition, you'd want to take the cases and you have next to U1 symmetry in the 4 dimension.
But it was okay in the Einstein-Sasaki case, right?
Yeah, that case. So that case, we had an S2 bundle over S2 plus C2. And we attacked the U1R, which is in here. It was the polar coordinate of that S2, and we just played it up there.
We have a global U1R isometry. T-dualizing along it breaks supersymmetry, it doesn't preserve.
No. Because the killing spin is dependent on that coordinate. So you want the lead derivative of the spinners to be invariant under that condition. That's the condition.
So the bilinear and the spinners are all invariant because they go into the metric, but the spinners themselves are not?
No, the bilinears also can depend on the U1R direction. They can be a phase. So it's a little bit more subtle.
So it's like, it is a killing symmetry.
So it is a killing
symmetry.
So
the metric,
yeah.
Not the fluxes.
So not the bilinear. So
the metric is actually so the metric, quadratic.
Exactly. That particular combination, those particular bilinears appearing, then it is. That each individual bilinear, some of them are invariant and some of them are.
Okay. And these fluxes in other fields are also not invariant under this.
No, the flux, all the fluxes are invariant.
All the fluxes are?
Yeah.
So really is, it really
I mean, it really is a symmetry of the solution. Yeah, it is.
If you
don't
analyze theory, you get a human ADS 4 across some other manifold. Can you link those solutions to the long ADS 4 cross? I mean, it's a warped ADS 4.
ADS 4 cross?
Cross some. It's a warped ADS 4, so I mean, if you get an ADS 5, just need to analyze theory. There's some ADS 4 structure with a warp factor.
I haven't thought about that.
Do you get any other pluses in the description?
Actually, you want to recover 11-dimensional ADS4 solutions?
Yes, ADS4 cross.
It's possible, I don't know.
Those things are pluses.
Yeah, there's a lot of knowing about those, I agree.
My
general feeling was, this is the general class, it's specific solutions. I mean, I think in general, that would give you singular solutions if you did that. But since these are just conditions, you could play that game.
Because, I mean, the equation just goes through. I mean, the singularity is something to check in each frame. I mean, you can solve them in 11 dimensions, you'll get a new ADS 4 solution, which might be happy.
Mm-hmm.
I have a silly question. When you do T-duality, you find the new mathematical description of the same physics, right?
Yes.
So how can one of them have supersymmetry and the other not?
The winding moment of them two. So if you take S5, ADS5 cross S5, my stuff had a series of things about it. So you T dualize, think S5 is a U1 fibration over CP2, If you t-dualize on the S1 direction, you'll get some time to A geometry. That you'll break super symmetry. So the wine mode.
Some illegal t-duality, so you're not creating the same thing.
Well,
no. Is string theory, I think the thing is that must really preserve supersymmetry in a full string theory when you have the wine.
I think it was the paper that was the called idea. Supersymmetry without supersymmetry.
Yeah. So at the supergravity level, you would break supersymmetry, but if you added in all the winding modes, they would somehow form together into supermodes.
You have a spin C structure on the CP2, so you actually, at first you think you can't even define spinners, let alone have supersymmetry, do all the CP2 times S1. His point was that the B field comes, to the rescue and gives you a spin C structure on the CP2, so he can define Gravitino on the CP2 times S1.
It's not clear.
The title of the paper was super simple.
It's not clear it's useful. It's some observation that's about.
Actually,
I found
it extremely
useful. Okay. It must be then. Okay. Okay, sorry.
I'm bothered by this seven ring, charge. Sources. Do you have an explicit solution in which it is non-zero?
No.
There are some general arguments that you say that.
It would never happen?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would be interesting. I mean, that would be very nice if one could get a lot of this stuff. Okay. Just for the last few minutes, let me. So this was stage one of the project.
Machine and
get the conditions. And the second stage is to try and stare at them and think of a suitable simplification. So in the 11-dimensional story, we just said, well, let the sixth manifold be complex. And I can't tell you in any nice words what we did, what we imposed upon this, but there is. It's in the detail, but we can make some simplifications, and we did that, and I wish I had a name for it, but I don't. But we assumed P equals 0, x condilitron equals 0, and we also made some other assumptions, which one of which was that there was an extra killing vector. So in addition to this U1R symmetry, there was another one. And when you put a couple of other ingredients together, you find that the solutions actually have an SU2 cos U1 squared symmetry. So we didn't assume this to begin with. We made much, much weaker assumptions, but nevertheless, you were led to that ansatz. So let me write it down. This is also horrible, but compared to that, it's very nice. Okay, so here's the killing direction. We've introduced coordinates d by d psi to be the killing direction. Sigma 3 is a left invariant one form on the 3 sphere. And the rest is okay, the sigmas, d sigma 1 is d sigma, is sigma 2 wedge sigma 3 and cyclic. So the left invariant 1 forms on the 3 sphere. And you see the metric has this U1 fiber direction, twisted by this one form here. We have a radial direction, which is called lambda. And then the left invariant 1 forms are sitting here and here. And you notice the coefficient of sigma 1 squared is the same as sigma 2 squared. So that gives you an extra symmetry. So we have SU2, because it's written in terms of sigma 1, sigma 2, and sigma 3. We have a U1 because these coefficients are the same. We can rotate sigma 1 into sigma 2. And we have another U1, which is the U1 R symmetry. Okay. And you can write down an expression for the flux in terms of these data, in terms of this data, and you notice that everything just depends on two functions, g and h. G and h are just functions of lambda. And if anyone's good at solving nonlinear ODEs, I have one for you. So deceptively simple. Maybe it is simple. So that's the system. So they're just h and g are just functions of lambda, and they satisfy those couple first order nonlinear ODEs. Any solution of those will give a solution, a full solution of ADS, a full solution of type 2b with an ADS5 factor with non-vanishing 3 form. So if people, well, exact solutions of that would be great. So what do we find? Well, we found one exact solution. Very simple.
Lambda
is the radial.
The dot is lambda.
So that's simple. Yeah, that's simple looking, and that's a very simple solution. So we're very excited about this. But
lambda. So let's see. So you're just writing down the measure of 5 manifolds.
Yeah. Yeah.
Compact 5.
Okay. Everything I did before was local, so at this stage, these are just some local equations. In this case, the range of lambda is 0 and root 3, yeah. So lambda is defined over an interval.
Is it smooth at the endpoints?
Yes, it's smooth. Well, I'll get to the punchline before you. It's a known solution.
Oh.
So, disappointingly, it's an already known solution. The Pilch and Warner found this particular solution of ADS, this warp compactification of ADS5, with vanishing dilaton, three-form fluxes. In fact, they found it by using gauge supergravity in 5 dimensions. So, from a completely different route, unfortunately, we've just recovered something that was known. So, a bit disappointing. But, proof that we got all our signs correct. Okay, but that's just one solution for ODE. So as I said, if we could, exact solutions would be nice. But what we've done is numerically analyze it, which is unfortunately suggests that it's not too hopeful. So these all have topology S5. This has topology S5. Okay, there are solutions.
The G, the three form is.
And the three form is non-zero, yeah. But the axion and dilaton is zero. Oh, dilaton's constant.
How does the three form solution look like?
We might have an expression. Yeah, I can show you. It's not particularly illuminating, I think. Okay, so we analyze this numerically, and again, another excitement. There are solutions where the metric is a perfectly regular S5. So it looks like we have a one parameter family. But then the joy was short-lived because the spinners are not globally defined. So this is all local, so there's some range of the coordinates psi and the range of the coordinates on the 3-sphere, and you cook them up to get around 5-sphere here that's perfectly regular, but then you find that the spinners aren't globally defined. So then you say, well, okay, it's that's bad luck, it's not super symmetric, but we at least have solutions. And then you work a little harder, and then you find the flux is not good. So, one of these phases. Okay, so...
Can you make an analysis on the modular space of solutions?
Yeah, I think we probably have, this is probably all the good solutions that exist in there, but since it's just numerical, I'm not sure. So it would be nice to have exact solution. You just quickly demonstrate that this is the story. I mean, there's a small hope that there's something more here. Okay, so just to finish up then, where do I think this is going? Well, one place it could be going is, so this was nice, but I made this assumption in doing this that p was equal to zero. So one could relax that condition and try and find solutions. And for people who know this story well, there's a solution which interpolates between the conifold and the Pilch-Warner fixed point. And Pilch-Warner and collaborators have recently found that. So, unfortunately, well, they've only recently done this, so this was one of our motivations, was to find that solution. And it seems likely that that class of solutions which they have, numerically, is just obtained by relaxing this condition. So one can do this using our language, but I fear that all we'll do is recover their solution.
Are you contemplating seven brains there?
Yeah, that's a good question. The axion is zero, I think. So I think probably... I'm not sure.
The dilaton should be because the central charges are different.
No, the central charge is the same. 27 on 30. But nevertheless, the dilaton is non-zero inside the geometry. So, a more general question is deformations of known superconformal field theories, and Luna and Meldacena found these beta deformations of n equals 4. But these aren't the only deformations, exact marginal deformations of n equals 4. There's other ones. So there's going to be other solutions deforming away from S5. So there will definitely be in our formalism, but whether one can extract them or not, I don't know. So one could try, as a first step, just to embed the beta deformations to see, get some more intuition for how one could find those. Other things one could do, but I think this is it would be a lot of effort, but one could demand n equals 2 supersymmetry in it instead of n equals 1. One would get a more complicated story because you have more bilinears and they would cook together in more complicated ways. However, at the end of the day, this is a more constrained system, so the geometry underlying it should be simpler once one gets to the bottom of it. And that just a final comment, just to reiterate that since we have the most general geometries in ADS5 of 2B, general questions like whether A maximization or something like that is holding can be at least addressed in this formalism. So the kind of question one could ask is, take the general geometry, assume you have another killing vector, or one or more killing vectors, and see if something like A maximization, in the sense that Yao and Vitali and Sparks proved, could be manifest in a more general setting. But that's sort of a more general, open-ended question. Okay, I'll stop there.
Yeah. And your space is compact.
Is that on the GS5 existence of the second T1?
Nope, I think so. There is a question, so if you want your U1 to be
just
globally defined?
Just yes. Locally, so the composition in U1 angle of Taylor SID6 is just a local definition. But does that mean that if you start traveling in this direction, you never get back to where you started? So.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
How can you do that unless you have...
Sorry, I see what you're saying. Sorry, if the U1 is an R and not a compact... If it has non-compact orbits, then you necessarily have another U1. Yeah. Sorry. That was like... But I don't think that's... At the moment, that's not helpful because we don't know enough about the global property. I mean, in the case when that U1 is not globally defined, then you're right, that four-dimensional space will necessarily have to have another Kinney vector. But the first case, the most simple case you might consider is when the U1 is globally defined as closed orbits, and then your four-dimensional space is the generalization of Kähler-Einstein. How can I have not closed orbits? If it wraps around a torus, irrationally pitched. So it fills up the torus.
Yeah, but is it then still
U1? No, so it's an R.
Yeah, so
that's
a better
position. I see, yeah. But there's a local, there's an isometry with no enclosed orbits.
If they are charges that are irrational, then that means as Ken...
If they're irrational, then you necessarily would have to have another... Exactly. So the generic story, presumably, is that you have additional Killing vectors in these geometries, just like the general Sasaki-Einstein case is that you have additional.
Maybe the generic story is analogous to the quasi-hyperbolic case. We don't have addition to one, but we don't have addition.
Yeah. I guess we just have so few examples with these fluxes to know. From your work, for example, that there's not a lot of deformations of these conformal field theories. And the beta deformations, we already know those solutions. So there's a few outstanding cases, like the n equals 4 extra deformations of n equals 4. So maybe there's just a few extra solutions and that's it. But maybe it's a very rich class. So I have no intuition about which irregular, quasi-regular, or the regular case would be the more...